G'day, everyone. Quick message before we start. What we're trying to do with this podcast is to help people better understand their mind and how it works and give people practical strategies they can use to maintain and improve their mental health. Would you consider helping us to continue to do that with a financial contribution, large or small? If so, thank you. Just follow the link in the show notes. All donations $2 or more are tax deductible. G'day, welcome to Minding Your Mind, all about your mind and how it works, mental illness and mental health, with Professor Ian Hickey, psychiatrist and co-director of the Brain and Mind Centre at the University of Sydney. Today, we're talking about boundaries. So boundaries are guidelines, limits, rules that we set ourselves that establish what we're comfortable with and what we're not comfortable with. For example, I want to set a boundary to try and make sure my work or study doesn't intrude into my weekend. Or I don't want to talk about some personal topics with people until I know and trust them. Or, look, we might be really close friends, but I don't share my social media passwords with anyone. That's a boundary I have. Or I like you, but I just don't want to hold hands in public yet. Or, Mum, don't just drop around whenever you feel like it. Please ask me if it's convenient first. So are having boundaries important? How do we establish them? I mean, before a couple of days ago, when I started thinking about this topic, I've never ever thought about my boundaries. I definitely have them, but I don't have a list. They just seem to have evolved ad hoc. What happens if we don't have boundaries? And how do we communicate our boundaries to others, given they're often about sort of hard to talk about sensitive areas? Ian, how would you define boundaries?
Oh, I think you did a pretty good job, James. No, but I want to go for personal boundaries very much, that you need boundaries. You need to be able to create a space around yourself,
yep,
in relationships, in work, in which you are comfortable.
Yes.
And those boundaries need to be clear to others. So in my world, we talk about boundary violations, people getting inside your stuff without your permission. And people can be reluctant about that. So if you're not clear about what they are, they may not be well known to others, and so problems might arise. And at other times, if they're overly restrictive, they prevent you from engaging with others.
Yeah, right.
So there's a kind of
spectrum.
There's a spectrum, but there's a need to get it straight. Now, we see in a kind of ill health way, again, extremes at either ends. No boundaries allows people to be violated a lot. And others to really, in all sorts of ways, mess with your world. Right. On the other hand, boundaries that are too rigid, too restrictive, limit your capacity to interact with others. In my world, it's mainly the former, the lack of development of appropriate boundaries, okay, that creates great vulnerability for exploitation, for abuse, for harm, where people have not been able to establish control over their own thoughts, control over their own bodies, control over their own actions.
Yeah, well, shortly we're going to talk about a number of categories where you might have boundaries: physical boundaries, sexual boundaries, psychological and emotional boundaries, time-based boundaries, and even financial boundaries. But I just said that I have never, ever written down my boundaries, really thought about them, but I think they're there and they kind of operate almost naturally without me needing to think about them. But is it worthwhile actually to start, you know, to have a list to think, to write down?
Across that spectrum you just described, yes.
Yes.
A lot of them are sociocultural.
Yeah, right.
I've just been traveling in North Africa and elsewhere in recent times. And in particular, I was traveling with one of my male friends. And he immediately said, oh, look, you're going to see a lot of men kiss each other.
Right.
You're going to be uncomfortable with that. I went, hang on a second. Because in your culture, nobody does that.
Mm.
This sort of very warm, intimate, male, physical greeting amongst friends. I went, oh, hang on. A few of my male friends, we do that. And I think
our
society's, in fact, when I recently saw someone I hadn't seen for a long time, male, and kissed him on the cheek, people looked at me, oh, Ian's gone a bit strange.
Mm.
Okay, no. I think our society's changed, but we've had some strong sociocultural boundaries about physical contact with people.
Yeah.
During COVID, we had to stop it. We had to stop shaking hands. We had to stop greeting people. Bit weird.
Mm.
New constructed artificial boundary that was hard to kind of cope with. So I think we grow up with, in a lot of our traditions socioculturally, different kinds of physical boundaries, emotional boundaries that we're all aware of. So you don't kind of have to think about them because everyone's doing them more or less the same.
And I guess the mental health benefits of boundaries are that if you know what yours are and you can immediately kind of identify if someone's getting close to overstepping them, you know, you can stop that happening, knowing that if it did happen, it would make you feel uncomfortable and
distressed.
Distressed. So you can avoid that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the lack of boundaries is a problem. When you say you've never thought about it,
yeah,
I'd suggest they've actually been in operation though.
Yeah, that's the weird thing.
Because the developmental things we have. I mean, when my kids were little, I loved it when they came home from preschool or school, singing the song about my body's my body, nobody but mine. They're being taught at like 3, 4. Yeah. People can't start touching you inappropriately. Mm. And it was kind of funny because it was meant really about externals. It was kind of funny to have kids come home from school and go, you know, as parents, hands off.
Our kids were taught to say, stop it, I don't like it. And they were told to say it, you know, if anything was happening that they were uncomfortable with, in a loud, assertive voice.
Well, very commonly in childhood, as my kids were younger, it comes with now, you are making me feel bad.
Yeah, good.
Not only are you doing it. So, you know, people have taken it from a sort of physical protection thing. But the reason I raised it with the kids, you need to know the context of that. Simply singing a song about nobody touches me, like in the family setting, was not really contextually right. Mm. It was meant in the external setting, stranger in the street or somebody who was external who needed to understand that kids need to develop a sense of boundaries for a protective reason. But they need to know the context in which that arises, which takes a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Now kids are being taught much more about the emotional kind of set of things.
Yeah.
My world and the way in which what you are doing is impacting on that. So that's kind of a new enunciation of, a new elaboration of it in a much more psychological way.
So I think we should run through various categories and talk about how we establish our boundaries in each one. Is a good way to work out where your boundaries are to kind of imagine various situations and imagine what might make us uncomfortable in a social situation, in a work situation, with friends, with family, with partners. Is that kind of it? We're looking for, okay, if that situation, if someone I didn't know came up and kissed me on the lips, I would feel uncomfortable. Therefore, that's a boundary.
Yeah. Mm. And this is where the social understanding and cultural kind of things, and you need to be kind of straight about it.
Yeah. Well, with yourself, firstly. And I think after we work out how to establish them, then we'll talk about how we communicate them with others.
Yeah, because some people say, oh, look, you should just be comfortable with that. Okay, well, I'm not really very comfortable with that. Funny you pointed it out. No. Oh, well, you're just a bit peculiar. Go, no. I'm much more uncomfortable about that. So I think, again, this discussion in recent times has forced people to stop and think that there are differences. Some people are very comfortable with a lot of physical intimacy, for example. Others are not, except amongst people they are very close to.
Yeah, well, let's start with physical intimacy. You know, I was in a park the other day and it was a big park and there weren't many people in it. I was sitting on a bench and someone came and sat. I guess it was maybe a 3-meter long bench, maybe 2-meter, and I was at one end. They sat at the other end. They had a lot of other options. I felt uncomfortable. I mean, I wasn't going to say anything. I just went and sat at another bench. But
you got up and moved.
Well, it just felt like my boundaries are being, like, why?
Your inner personal space was interfered with.
Yeah, like it wasn't on the bus where there was, you know, where there weren't any other empty seats. I felt like my personal space was being intruded.
So I think we have sociocultural rules. Hmm. Rules. They're understandings.
Yeah.
And I think, dare I say it, in Anglo-Saxon cultures and whatever else, the expectation would be maintain a reasonable distance.
Yeah. Given the circumstances. Given the circumstances. A bus is different.
But, well, you know, a bus when there's 20 empty seats and the person comes and sits next to you, it doesn't sit in any other seat. Hmm. You know, I think most of us kind of think, that person has got inside. Without my permission, without agreement, that person's really got inside the inner personal space.
And actually—
Now, in other cultures and other places, people may not agree with that, but—
And actually, you know, we're going to talk about communicating your boundaries, but sometimes you don't need to communicate them and it's better not to. Like that example in the park, I just got up and walked away. I didn't need to say, hey, you, I feel like you've intruded on my personal space here. Like there's no real benefit in doing that if I can just walk away. Do you think?
No, there's no – no, I agree with you. There's no benefit. You're better off just – the person has, for whatever set of reasons – not stuck with, I would say, commonly accepted social kind
of stuff. But perhaps another, you know, another physical one. Well, parents.
However, just on that one.
Yeah.
In different cultures and different settings, people do sort of get together more.
Yeah, true.
And might have been an expectation you'd start a conversation with the person.
Yeah.
You know, oh, just because no. you didn't know.
They might have been really depressed and wanted to.
But they might be really interesting.
Yeah, they might be. They might be.
My kids say to me all the time, Dad, did you really have to talk to that person?
True.
Couldn't you have? I said, well, hang on. There's an opportunity here. Mm. Okay. If I'm a little bit, if I'm not that uncomfortable about it,
yeah,
I might take side, just take the opportunity. The person's bothered to, the person's sort of sat there. And if you'd wanted to, if you felt comfortable with it,
you could chat to them.
You could have chatted to them.
I could have.
I say this because lots of older people, lots of people in parks, lots of people in social, dying to have a conversation.
Yeah, true.
Now, you were probably busy doing what you're doing, writing a novel in your head, spending some time alone, wanting to not interact with people. Yeah. Dave, so I'd agree with you. That person's kind of, there's a boundary transaction there.
Yeah, right.
Now, if they've gone inside without your permission, which has put you in a slightly uncomfortable problem, you're either going to have to move, which you did because you were doing whatever you wanted to do, or you're going to have to respond to their kind of invitation.
Yeah, right.
They're to transact.
They're really friendly. I was mean to them. What about this one? Parents, I don't come into your room, so please stay out of mine.
One of the most common ones, the teenager's room.
Fair enough.
The teenager's space.
But it's so, it's, there's all those clothes on the floor. Well, it's not your problem.
So the development, I mean, the way we started these sort of physical ones, because they're all about, end of the day,
I didn't mean to identity. Impersonate a female voice.
Did you?
Meant it to be non-gender specific. Oh, that's okay. But I feel like
it. Like I say, my sons would, just to be clear here, I thought you were talking about one of my sons.
Yeah.
Would have used exactly the same voice.
Yeah. But that's fair enough, isn't it? Physical boundary. There's my room. I didn't walk into your room.
That's a very modern kind of thing.
Well.
I mean, for those of us who grew up sharing rooms with six other siblings.
I mean, when you're a teenager in particular, you need your own haven.
So developing space, like developing physical space, developing an identity and developing control over that space, messy as it is, smelly as it is, degraded as it is. Yeah, but that also has impact on others.
Not much.
But you're alluding to an important thing, which is we all need to develop boundaries and then take responsibility for those boundaries, what happens on the inside of that. Okay? I've drawn this line here at the door. Okay. Well, what's happening on the other side? You've got to then take some responsibility for.
Oh,
there's some accountability.
Right. So
dirty clothes, six wet towels, whatever else, mold food under there, the pizza from 3 weeks ago.
We won't come into your room, fair enough. But we own the house. We want to maintain its value. Don't you take care of it.
Well, I'd leave out all the first bits. But, yeah, even if that's true, you do own the house. But it's an accountability for it. Okay. If you're going to run your own space and you're going to develop your own identity, you've got to take responsibility for it.
Right.
And that, you know, there's not just do anything in that space.
But there's also then the negotiation. Sure, I'll take responsibility of it, but my standards aren't your standards. You have your standards. There's a huge spectrum of the ways in which people want to live, we're not exactly the same.
And as we discuss quite often, you've then got the transaction between my world and your world and trying to find ways. Reason, I think, we get another really interesting area here, why teenagers should move out. Why? At a certain point.
Not at 13. You mean at the upper teen.
When it's possible. Mm. For people to live their own lives and take more accountability. I think I say this in the context of many, many people as they're getting older now under housing pressures, living at home more.
Yeah.
Becomes really hard.
Yeah.
You got these kind of issues, these transactions, because people do need to establish their own space, their own rules, their own ways of doing things, and yet they're in some sort of cohabitation situation where it ain't just that simple.
Okay.
But boundaries more
physical boundary.
Yeah,
I really like you, but I just don't want to hold hands in public. Maybe at some other time in the future when we've been together for longer, but not now. Oh, I can see you're really, really hurt. Well, emotional, that's physical boundary. Emotional boundary, that's kind of not my problem. That's kind of your problem. Like if you feel hurt and upset by that, I don't want to take that on in guilt. I just don't feel comfortable holding hands in public.
You're very good at that, James.
Well, to you.
Very few people, I think, would be quite so assertive as you just were in interaction.
I agree. I mean, I'm imagining in real life that would be
No, but people do have their physical boundaries intruded on quite a lot. People make assumptions. The transactions, and a lot of the transactions at the moment about consent to physical intimacy in teenage and in young adult relationships are about exactly this, that one party is very uncomfortable, is not wanting to go there, but feels that the other, without permission, has intruded a lot, hasn't sought permission. You know, so the expression of that is important.
Mm.
People are vulnerable, easily intimidated, easily emotionally manipulated to make transgressions against things that they're really not comfortable with.
Yes.
So I think this is a really good development, if you like, in the kind of consent world of trying to make it much more overt. Do you have permission to be more physically intimate? Usually a very low-key example, holding hands. But clearly in terms of touching other body parts, how you engage, you know, what teenagers do, what young adults do, and then, of course, throughout the rest of life, what permission, what understanding do you have about going where?
So that leads us to sexual boundaries, doesn't it?
Well, the physical intimacy in the first instance, and then sexual behaviours and everything else that flow from that. So our society has moved to, I think, in a good way, to more overt expression of that.
Yeah.
So that you have less violations and less misunderstandings. Well, violations is a harsh word, but certainly less misunderstandings and making people feel very uncomfortable.
But it's a very awkward situation because, you know, if you start to get physically intimate with someone, you know, it's that wonderful feeling of I like them, they like me, this is
But what's
depressing.
The good side of that? Hang on. What's the good side of that?
Well, you just feel good.
The reciprocity. No, I'd say the good side is the reciprocity.
Yeah. The physical intimacy, that's pretty good.
Well, two bits. Yeah. But there's the agreement. But then there's the other person behaving back the other way.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not a one-way street.
So then it can feel, though, you're putting a handbrake on it by saying, okay, that's my boundaries here. That's as far as I feel that's comfortable going at the moment. And there's, you know, you can almost imagine the look of hurt in the other person's eyes or the look of thwarted lust. They're kind of both a bit similar. So it's very easy to understand why that's difficult for people to say.
But there are often misunderstandings.
Yes.
And in the past, people say, well, you should have been comfortable with that.
Yeah, exactly.
You should have been okay about that.
Yeah.
And that can be everything, holding hands, sex on the first date. It can go all sorts of places. You should be okay because that's what everyone else is okay with.
Like that's not a good thing to say.
Clearly not.
Yeah.
But there are pressures and expectations. Mm. And if you like, I think in our world, and certainly the world I'm in, the sort of world of harm that arises, one's presented with lots of examples where people have transgressed those boundaries.
Yes.
Very readily, very easy, under the cloak of cultural norms. That's what people just do. That's the understanding.
I thought you liked me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Emotional blackmail.
You sent me back a text, so I thought it was fine to have sex with you.
Yeah.
You know.
No, but even in the little minutiae of it, there's very subtle emotional kind of blackmail really all the time. But you liked me. I thought we're having a great time and now suddenly you're being all cold. We say, I'm not being cold. This is just my boundary. I mean, it's very –
Yeah, so whatever words you would use, but what I'm comfortable with at this point.
Yeah.
So encouraging people to express that to reduce misunderstanding, certainly reduce violations of that.
They're difficult conversations.
They're hard conversations.
But they are conversations that build trust and intimacy if you're able to have them. Like, before we go any further, I just want you to know that da-da-da, and it's kind of – You know, you can see how it can be awkward, but you can also see how it can, in a way, bond people.
Exactly.
Mm.
It may lead to some further understanding as to why or how.
Yeah.
So there are differences. People come from different cultural backgrounds. They come from different religious backgrounds, family backgrounds, but also interpersonally, some people are just far less comfortable with being touched and physically interfered with than others who are all over each other all the time. Mm. You know, they're just different. So it's not right or wrong. One's not better or worse. They're just different. And if they're really different, they're much better articulated and understood.
And also, I mean, is this good advice that If someone is reluctant to respect your boundaries, it's not really in that moment a good time to start thinking about whether your boundaries are reasonable and whether you should change them. That might be a good thing to think about over the next day or two, but not at the moment, and not make a decision at the moment. You're right, I was being silly. You know, forget that boundary, let's go further, and then the next day you might regret it. Better to say, well, look, let me have a think about it. Maybe you're right, maybe you're not.
It's a really interesting relationship question. If you suddenly find yourself in a situation where people go right across your boundaries, I want to make an alarm thing here, red lights flashing, beware. You know, from a relationship point of view, if you find yourself in any kind of intimacy with someone who appears to have very little respect or interest in where your boundaries might lie, that's a big worry.
Yeah.
You said a mutual trust. This is a backwards and forwards. This is a serve and return kind of thing. What you're looking for are levels of transaction where trust is built by the exchange of these things to work out pretty quickly in a reciprocity kind of way where people's genuine interests are and where they're willing to go with various levels of intimacy or trust, psychologically, physically, everything else. Someone who just railroads into your emotional. We sort of emphasize the physical, but you see this in people's emotional life too.
Well, let's move on to emotional boundaries. A few examples, psychological and emotional boundaries. I don't want to share my social media passwords with you, but we're best friends. I don't feel comfortable talking about certain things. Could be different, obviously, depending on who you're talking to, best friend versus new acquaintances. I don't like it when you tell me off in front of my friends. I don't like it when you tell me off in front of the kids. If you're unfaithful, it's over. If you're upset that I've broken up with you, you know, emotionally, I'm not responsible for that. So they're all examples, I guess, of areas where emotional boundaries might be relevant.
You bet. Mm. And again, if people just railroad in, I find in my personal life and then you run into people, you know, what is your view? What is your deep thoughts about something?
Yeah.
How do you strongly feel about something?
I'm going,
I don't know you.
Yeah.
They ask something I might discuss with Elizabeth. I might discuss with another few questions, but I'm not discussing with you. Mm. But your expectation, you can just railroad in there deeply into my emotional life and my psychological life and demand kind of my more inner thoughts.
Yeah.
Which are complicated and often conflicting and, you know, complex in their construction, not easily explained to others. Mm. No way. So I think we haven't been good at times at saying, no, I'm not happy to discuss that with you. Barely know
but,
you.
But there's a way of saying it that's not like that. I mean, it's almost like, I don't know. I don't really. I mean, the best way is just say, I'm not really sure, and quickly ask them a question about something different. So you can do it without actually expressing that you feel it's a boundary thing.
Exactly. So in my, as you know well, James, in my professional world, we tend to go with the, could you tell me more about that?
Mm.
We tend to invite you to go where you want to go.
In my social world, my backup question whenever I get somewhere I don't want to be is, so what sort of music are you into?
Yeah.
Usually works. Yeah. People love talking about music.
But it is interesting. We've emphasized earlier on physical intrusiveness and boundaries around that.
Yeah.
There is absolutely psychological intrusiveness.
Oh, definitely.
And in the new psychological world, you know, where we do articulate many and more of these things, I find it very annoying that a lot of people think that's permission to intrude on people's psychological life. Just because we all got words about it and we have an expectation that you can talk about it or that you can articulate that stuff, that people feel free to interrogate my internal psychological world. I go, hang on a second, you don't have permission.
Yeah.
Just because I can doesn't mean I want to with you.
Yeah.
So I think actually—
And look, another good way of avoiding it is I'm not really sure. And if— You know, you want to give them – because usually when people say that, if they say, what do you think about X issue, what they really mean is I want to trumpet at you about what I think is X issue. So if you're happy to listen to them or at least can tolerate it and they say, what do you think about this issue? You say, I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well,
off they go. All you have to do is go, a couple of times and change the subject.
I'm a bit narkier.
Aren't you?
I'm a bit – I guess from the world I'm in, I'm a bit narkier about I'm not really happy to talk about that.
Okay, good on
you. At this time with you in this setting, like pushing back a bit to go, because I assume these people, this person probably does this all the time, you know, And with people who are less assertive or less narky than me, they cause harm. Mm. You know, they're intruding, they're crossing a boundary that hasn't been agreed.
Yeah.
And that doesn't build intimacy and trust. There's a violation in that.
Well, let's go to closer relationships, close friends, close family, close partner. When one of those does something that makes you feel uncomfortable, and it's often in front of other people. Sometimes it's a joke that has a hard edge and it's aimed at you. Sometimes in a family situation, it's one person putting another person down, a sibling, a parent, whatever, another parent, another one of the kids in front of the others, and you feel uncomfortable. Now, I think when you feel uncomfortable, from what we've discussed earlier, it's an alarm bell that your boundaries have been crossed. Someone just said something who I trust and feel and maybe even love that made me feel bad. And it's important, I think, when there's a continuing relationship, to take them aside one-on-one and tell them and say, that made me feel bad. Yes. And I'm not sure, is that a boundaries thing? Maybe it is.
I wouldn't have put it in the boundaries discussion, but now you raised it. It kind of is. In an interpersonal kind of world, an agreement about how this happened, but this is an inappropriate social behaviour and it's caused distress. The general point you're making of trying to draw attention to that with the hope of preventing it in the future or pointing out the distress that it's caused is a good thing in social relationships, because otherwise these things just generally continue.
Fester.
They fester. And one person's more distressed and the behaviour generally continues. So, I mean, the person who's done it often doesn't mean harm.
No.
But it's caused distress.
Yeah.
So there's a
maybe it's been said about me, are very, very sensitive, oversensitive even. Some people
– well, that's the discussion.
I've been described as that and it's fair comment.
No, that's the discussion that can take place, which is – I'm glad you said that. I think it's two-way. There is an interesting discussion then. Has the person been oversensitive?
Yeah.
And I think in the modern world of cancel cultures and words and stuff, there's a lot of people who feel we've arrived at a situation where you can't say anything about anything. So we avoid – anything. And it is difficult, I think, because often we do have conflicting or different kind of views. In families, in social groups, in workplaces, you raised earlier on, between parents and kids over different views of the way the world should be, which need to be expressed, and they are different. If the situation says, oh, I can't express them because the other person is distressed. So you can end up in the wrong situation, I think, with the non-expression of anything. So there's a kind of interesting balance thing. And I think in many situations, we're trying to find the right way of doing that. We're trying to find a better way of doing that.
You know, a really hard one is work-based boundaries. So a common one is, I don't want to work weekends. Or it might be about, I would prefer you didn't put your hand on my shoulder when you're trying to get my attention. Both of them are really awkward because there's inherently a power imbalance between employee and employer.
So the historic ones where powerful boss figures, particularly powerful male boss figures, have been able to do all sorts of things to subordinates in organisations and say, well, you know, that's okay. Clearly now there's a kind of, it's not okay.
Yeah.
We need to kind of respect, independent of the power situation, people's boundaries.
Or it might just be, I prefer you didn't shout at me. Like, I don't react well when people shout at me. If you want me to do something differently, just tell me and I'll do it.
I love the way you've introduced assertiveness into many of these conversations, that you would actually say that.
It's easy to do that theoretically. It's harder in actual practice.
Exactly. What you said is the appropriate thing. Now, I'd suggest that many people think that, but they don't articulate it.
Yeah, exactly, because of the power imbalance.
Because of the situation in which they find themselves, because of the dependencies that run in families, in relationships, et cetera. So the boundary question is, again, a two-way street. At times, and if you're in those situations, have you thought about whether you've gone too far yourself? You raise an interesting one, parents with kids. Okay, you were being more respectful of the kids' boundaries than I think I often am. I'm kind of more likely, that room's a total mess. You can't just lock yourself in there and have mold take over and breed penicillin. There's stuff, But there is an issue. There is an issue of, you know, at times that kind of assumption, my house, my place, we're going to have some reasonable order here, runs across another issue, which is a developing boundary in kids and a developing place. Physically dealing with kids, just the assumption that as your kids get older, you can continue to deal with them physically in the way that you've dealt with them when they're younger, clearly doesn't apply. The cross-sex, cross-other relationship types, cross-gender type stuff, you know, I think people are being forced to think about it more, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But if that people will be different. And you may, with one person in the same situation, like a workplace is a good example. I think there are people in the workplace that we have an understanding that agreeably we may be able to physically touch in various ways, but it's understood, it's agreed. But others, it's not the case.
Yeah.
Because there's no prior agreement.
Yeah. So you've got to get things clear. It's the same with similar with shouting. You know, if you can just approach the boss when they are clearly calm and be very reasonable yourself and not, you did this and you shouldn't do that. It's more like, when you do that, I understand I did something wrong, but I'm, you know, when someone shouts at me, I feel really, really bad, and it'd be much more productive if, and the workplace one too, you know, I really have other things I want to do in my life, and is there any way that we can organize my work, for which I'm paid 5 days a week, so that I do it 5 days a week and there's not an expectation that I do it 7 days a week.
Yeah. Setting limits, being clearer, making boundaries.
Yeah.
And in the world we're in, where there are so many things that loosen that, there are so many things in our world that go across, new ways of communicating, new others. I mean, the social media world, the texting world, there's a whole lot of issues about boundaries around that. We have not worked out what can be shared, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. There's a whole lot of stuff.
Haven't we worked that out?
No. Look at all the problems that people get into. Sending images, doing things, sending text. Oh, that's not what I meant. I think people do a lot of things in that world that they would not do in the ordinary interpersonal world. They wouldn't do in the previous world. Oh, they go, it was a misunderstanding. Oh, I wouldn't have. If I'd known you were going to be so offended, or, you know, people share stuff and they do stuff and they yell. They scream. Look at Twitter. I mean, they behave in ways which clearly run across normal social norms and rules and boundaries and intrusions in quite abusive ways at times. And they go, it's just on the phone. It's just a text. It's just a social media platform.
Don't tweet drunk. Don't text drunk.
Don't tweet naked. Don't assume that it's okay, because what you're not getting is a response to the other person. Oh, I thought it'd be okay. You know, I thought we were on good terms. I thought I could use that kind of language. I thought I could say that kind of thing. Yeah, you know, all these are free things. The libertarian kind of view. You can say anything on Twitter, or you can say anything on Facebook, because it's just, you know, it's not in real life.
And be cautious.
Well, you are.
Well, on Twitter.
You are cautious. Lots of people aren't.
I know, but it's a good
And they assume there's no boundary, and there's been no legal boundary. There's a kind of people. So now we're having to make up social rules and laws and regulation, because the whole thing clearly – major boundary transgressions have become the norm.
So a good one with Twitter, I think, that I use is, before you tweet something, remember the worst thing you've ever, nastiest thing you've ever read on Twitter. They're going to be reading it. So that's the standard. They're going to be reading it and they might respond. If you're comfortable with sending the tweet, knowing that person is going to read it and may respond, send it.
But it is a fascinating thing. In the world I'm in, with some of it's just controversial and difficult, you know, I get back some of the most outrageous kind of stuff, to which I then block. And people go, do you block people? I go, absolutely, I block people. I would block them in real life. I wouldn't engage. I've got, you know, there are reasonable limit. There's a boundary.
Yeah.
I'm not free and open for anyone to walk across, no more than I'm free and open to be physically interfered with, to be psychologically interfered with in these new ways.
We're going to do an episode on social media soon where we'll talk more in depth about those issues. Last boundary, and one I think people often undervalue, and I think is so important, time. Time between work and non-work, time for things that are really important. In our episode, the seven keys to happiness, one is, well, kind of the one that rules them all is doing things you enjoy, working out what the things that make you happy are, what the things you really enjoy are, and doing more of them. And to have boundaries around your time for the things you know that make you happy, whether they be activities, whether it be sport and exercise, whether it be family, whether it be social activities, to get enough time for them, you've got to put boundaries around other times.
Yeah. You know, my personal favorite in the time dimension is the body clock. It's the 24-hour cycle.
Yep.
And people got to do stuff, a certain amount of physical activity. They got to sleep. They got to do pleasurable things. They got to do stuff outside. You know, if you just behave as if they don't. But I like your kind of way. There's a certain compartmentalization of stuff. Mm. I like the idea of you sitting on the park bench previously. Like, you like to spend a certain amount of time on your own because a lot of your world is very engaged. But you like some time in your own head. It's important to recognize that and go, okay, I need that time to think and sort.
Or sometimes not think.
Or to have the absence of thought.
Yeah.
You know, to not be, to just be, as people do in yoga, meditation, or just to be. And I think that's really worth thinking about as well. I got to organize my life. I'm very into the, at the moment, how do you sustain high performance or something over a long period?
Yeah, so it comes back down to really almost the theme of our entire podcast series, the things that work for you. So are you a person that needs to create some boundaries around your time so you have a couple of hours a week or half an hour a day or whatever it is to do something, whether it be me and just have time for yourself or something totally different for that, that is something that works for you that you know is good for your mental health. And if you do have that thing, then you need to create some time boundaries to ensure that you have enough time to do it because it's good for your mental health.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's our episode about boundaries. Any questions, comments, suggest further topics, send us an email, mindingyourmind2, mindingyourmind, that's numeral2 at gmail.com. Minding Your Mind is supported by the generous philanthropic donations from families who support ongoing research into youth mental health. Our book, Minding Your Mind, is out. Ian's book about depression, The Devil You Knew, is out. Further help is available from Headspace, Beyond Blue, Head to Health and Lifeline. Google them. You can call Lifeline on 1311114.